Once you get done with this episode, you may find it worth your while to stop by ICU101.com, the Intensive Care Academy, our video-based platform. We just dropped a new lesson on the advanced management of subarachnoid hemorrhage for those of you in neuro units or units that see such patients. And we have a whole brand shiny new website for your viewing pleasure. Lots of work on the back end recently. Check it out at ICU101.com. Hey everyone, I'm Brandon Odo.
And I'm Brian Bowling.
And this is Critical Care Scenarios, the podcast where we use clinical cases, narrative storytelling, and expert guests to unpack how critical care is practiced in the real world.
All right, hello everyone, welcome back to the podcast. Brian Bowling and Brandon Odo with you as usual.
Yep.
So we have an old friend on the podcast today. Nick Gioni is joining us. We're going to talk some mechanical ventilation. He is going to try to convince us that we should not use PRVC. And that's a tough sell because Brandon and I both like PRVC. Lots of people love it. Some people hate it. So we're going to talk about it today. Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you guys so much. I will take this opportunity to say, if you're listening, press stop and go and listen to Tobin's episode. Just phenomenal, phenomenal episode. Very jealous because I emailed him to come on my meager podcast and he sent me back this very long, eloquent no, which is unfortunate. However, it's probably the best podcast I've ever heard, like medical podcast, just in general. So like very well job done.
Thanks. It was certainly controversial. So
yeah, I could tell.
It's like lay some groundwork.
Okay.
So that we can figure out what we agree on.
Okay.
Which I'm sure is many things. So
yeah.
First of all, you know, definitions.
Yes, sir.
PRVC is, first of all, a name that we all use, which is not necessarily found on all ventilators. As a matter of fact, I don't know if there's any current ventilator that actually calls this mode by this name. But like
servo.
APRV and a lot of other things.
Does, yeah.
Is servo still does. Calling it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Draeger calls it autoflow, which is a setting you apply to volume control, which annoys me.
Oh, really?
Puritan calls it volume control plus, which also annoys me. Hamilton, I think, is that the volume guarantee one, I think, or something
there's
like that?
There's APV.
Yeah.
I don't know about volume guarantee, but it becomes like this volume guarantee thing, but APV, which I don't know what it stands for.
It's tough because, you know, there's been these efforts to standardize nomenclature on vents, and you appreciate the need for it the more you deal with this stuff, but the problem is that no one uses, like, the most formal name, so we're still stuck with we all sort of pick a name. But anyway, what we're referring to is a mode of, you know, what I would call a breath type, meaning it's how you sort of configure how a controlled breath is delivered. And you can combine it with various types of triggering, like volume control or SIMV, if that's your thing. But PRVC basically means you're delivering what I would call a pressure control breath, meaning it has the kind of normal characteristics of pressure control, meaning you're targeting it to a certain inspiratory pressure, and you're maintaining it for generally a certain duration. Usually you set the inspiratory time on most ventilators. And then when the time is over, the breath is done. And then you deliver whatever volume you end up with that airway pressure. It has a decelerating ramp of flow because that's something that normally happens when you maintain a fixed pressure. And that is that. If you take a pressure control breath and you tell the ventilator, listen, that's all very good, but I'd like to have a certain tidal volume here, because that's something we normally want. We like to have a fairly consistent minute ventilation because that's how we determine our overall CO2 clearance, and that usually means not having tidal volumes of 900 or of 100, somewhere in between, and of course, likewise for lung protectiveness. And you say, well, I want to nail a volume of about 450. And the vent says, okay, boss, I'll try. And it gives a pressure control breath at whatever inspiratory pressure. And then it looks at the tidal volume that results. And if it's too high or too low, it adjusts the pressure for the next breath and sort of goes from there in what we call a servo fashion. You're kind of trying to titrate to an endpoint, like a thermostat in your house. Same thing you're supposed to do, by the way, on straight pressure control manually. Monitor the tidal volumes and adjust. How aggressively you do that may depend on how attentive you are. But that's all it's doing. It's varying from breath to breath, to try to achieve a certain relatively consistent title volume. Do you agree so far, sir?
Agree on the outset that all this nomenclature is very confusing. You know, Eduardo and Chapurn and Shuba's paper on sort of like the standardization of the nomenclature, I think, as well is needed. I think that whenever you ask people to like rememorize something, it's always like a hard sell. But I agree that we should think about these things in like what variables do we control and what variables do we not control. I've been fought tooth and nail by attendings that it's volume control. It's in the name, pressure regulated volume control. I'm like, but it's a pressure-based mode, as you point out, for the three reasons. One, during the inspiratory time, the pressure doesn't change. Number two, the flow is unfixed. It can change. And number three, we set an eye time as the cycle. So from inspiration to expiration, what tells the ventilator going to expiration is the cycling mechanism, which is the time. So for those three reasons, it's a pressure-based mode of ventilation. Some of the vents, you know, when you sort of initiate it, either do like a test breath, like a test volume control breath. The last point that I'll make, and I think you're going to get into this, is this adage or this, I'm going to call it dogma at this point, that pressure control gives you the lowest peak airway pressure. Is that something we've heard before?
Yeah. People do say that. And okay. I usually take that as this, meaning something similar to when I encounter a patient on renal dose dopamine, which is that it's more of a marker for someone not understanding what's going on. That has to be one of the dumbest statements I've ever heard.
but we agree that that's, we hear that, right?
Yeah,
hear that.
That's
all the
thing
time.
People say, yes.
But the question is, so that begs the question is like, where does that come from, essentially? Like,
I think this arises from people making a similar statement about pressure control, which is usually the chain of reasoning that if you start on volume control and you see high airway pressures, they switch them to pressure control because by virtue of them directly setting the pressure, you will no longer have high airway pressures. And PRVC will basically do the same thing because you are likewise controlling the pressures directly.
A little historical context, and I'm not that old. I'm old, but I'm not super old. And, you know, in the turn of the century, like the 2000s, we remember that, you know, there was this thought that high peak airway pressure caused barotrauma, right? So there was this sort of investigation into how do we make the peak airway pressure less? And, you know, then the adaptive modes come along. If you look at the studies, there's a few famous ones in critical care medicine. One's from, I can send you all this stuff after. I don't want to just pull it out of thin air. I have these citations. But if you go to Getting, which makes Servo, their website, and you look up PRVC, they cite some studies, and one of them is from Sorensen in 1997. So Sorensen says in that study, you know, randomized controlled trial, volume control versus PRVC, less airway pressure for PRVC, crazy p-value, like 0.004, like, you know, crazy, crazy low. They compared PRVC to volume control with a square flow. So it's not that PRVC delivers the volume you want at any less pressure, because volume control with square flow is going to have a higher peak airway pressure all the time, because at the end of inspiration, you still have flow, right? So there's still a flow times resistance portion of the peak airway pressure in the total. If you look at Getting's in these companies' websites now, it says lowest peak airway pressure for total volume delivered. I don't use square flow a lot. I use it sometimes in ARDS to do the stress index and stuff. But I think generally, I mean, do you guys use square flow or?
No, I mean, not as a normal thing. The occasional like obstructive patient.
It's an unnatural way to breathe. When you take a breath in, even now, right? We breathe in initially, we get the most flow. And then as the alveolar pressure rises, sort of starts to equalize and the flow decays to, you know, to some number. Zero, less than zero, whatever it is. So we call that natural decay. As you point out in volume control, we can't sort of do a natural decay. We could do like a, you know, sort of a straight line decay. So a constant decelerating flow to some number. So PRVC does not deliver some total volume at a lower peak airway pressure, only compared to volume control with square flow.
Well, and that's my objection with this sort of reasoning. It's like physiologically, makes no sense. There are not that many variables in respiratory physiology. You can't like make up a way to reduce the compliance of a breath if that is what their lungs are. The only thing you can really manipulate is the resistive pressures of the airway, and I don't care what the peak pressures are if they're not inducing, you know, a high alveolar pressure. So to imply that you can take someone and say, oh, they have a poor compliance, therefore I'm getting a high plateau pressure, alveolar mm-hmm. pressure for a certain tidal volume, or for right. a certain pressure, I'm getting a low volume, whichever side you want to start from. And I'm going right. to change that by changing which of those things I target makes no sense at all. You're blowing up a balloon. How are you going to change what that balloon does in response? The only thing you're changing is potentially the peak pressures. And I really don't care. I mean, I don't care. I think that, like you said, there was maybe a time when people were not as clear where lung injury comes from. Now, I right. don't think there's many people who still believe that a high peak pressure with a normal plateau pressure is mm-hmm. something that'll induce barotrauma.
I agree with you. I agree wholeheartedly that the peak airway pressure generally doesn't matter if the alveolar pressure isn't being affected. We see that in like resistance issues, as you mentioned.
There's certainly not going to be any benefit or difference over using pressure control, because that's you're giving the same breath. There's just a sort yeah. of maybe more convenient way about going about it. So hopefully they would at least say that, oh no, I'm making a case for any pressure control breath. Not specifically RVC. Now, yeah. in fact, they may or may not say that because, in fact, many people don't really understand these modes. But
right. how can you make the compliance better, right? You can make the compliance better, or the vent think that it's better, at least, if the patient's doing part of the work of breathing. Because the vent thinks to itself, I just gave a pressure of 20 and I got a total volume of 700. Holy Toledo, I better take that pressure down. Mm-hmm. But some of that work of breathing is being done by the patient, and the vent can't see that. You know, the modes where the vent sees that is things like NAVA and PAV. You know, that's a mode of ventilation where as the work goes up, and you guys had on Ben Fabry too, right? From he did the Dreger, like the tube compensation stuff.
Yeah.
And I think part of Ben's argument, and not argument, but you know, his approach is that as the work of breathing goes up, the ventilator should sort of apply more pressure to help with the work of breathing. In PRVC, and admittedly volume control, I will say that as the work of breathing goes up, you know, the support goes down from the vent. If I plucked a random person who works in the ICU, could be RT, APP, physician, resident, if you had someone who had like sort of severe work shifting on volume control, most people can look at that and be like, ah, something's off about that thing. I'm not really sure what, but there's definitely something wrong. Whereas if you flipped it and put them in either, you know, PC or PRVC, these pressure modes, I think people have a harder time recognizing that asynchrony, like the work of breathing asynchrony on those modes.
Let me try to spell out this argument here, because the one you make is one of the most common ones you'll hear when people are talking about PRVC. And, you know, we talked about this servo response where if your volume overshoots, the vent will reduce the inspiratory pressure, and if you undershoot, it'll increase it. That makes sense. You're trying to target a certain tidal volume. It makes sense if the compliance of the lungs is determined only by the lungs, meaning you have stiff lungs or floppy lungs, that's fine. But as you say, it'll also be determined by the patient's own respiratory effort, PMUS, as the vents say, because if they are doing some work pulling on their diaphragm and their thoracic muscles and expanding their chest on their own, that's less work for the vent to do. The patient has already opened up some of their lungs, and therefore, they're going to end up with a larger tidal volume for a given inspiratory pressure, and therefore, the vent is going to reduce the pressure on the next breath. And the argument here is that in a sick patient who is maybe in respiratory distress or breathing hard, you may not want to reduce their inspiratory pressure and the support the ventilator is giving them. And in like a worked up patient who's really sucking at the ventilator, they can end up essentially with no ventilator support. The vent's like, well, I've turned it down all the way, boss, and they're still getting big volumes. I can't make it negative, so that's about all. And that's maybe not good.
If the vent called me boss, that would be the best, like that'd be the best day if the vent was like, sorry, boss, I can't,
like,
you know.
Iron Man's Friday. Yeah.
And you can certainly some of them won't go below a support of a certain number. I don't know what that is, like 5 or 10 or something. I have many pictures, right? I have single digit peak airway pressures on PRVC, and I walk by, I'm like, why is the peak airway pressure 7? And everyone's like, what do you mean? That's great. I'm like, it's not great. It's It's bad.
And I mean, just to explain, most vents, if you want to know how much support or pressure the vent is giving on these modes, you have to look at the peak pressure and sort of do the math. So if the peak is 20 and the PEEP is 5, the driving pressure there is 15-ish, that's the pressure control, the additional pressure the vent is giving. And so if you want to know how much kind of the PRVC is doing, you have to do that. So, and like you said, if the floor is usually, it's usually more than zero. I think ours don't go below 5/5, meaning you have a peak of like 10 on the lowest.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The highest you can set as whatever the alarm is.
What do you have?
But
do you
we're
have
on the Puritans here. I used
the PBs
a few years ago. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. PBs. We are abdicating, I think, a certain amount of autonomy to the ventilator and say, okay, boss, like, you know, make the volume 500 and then, you know, do what you think is right. You know, our first goal with the ventilator should be to not torture and to not kill, because the vent can certainly be a very dangerous weapon if, you know, it's being sort of misused or...
Well, I mean, I think that what you're saying is that this is a more complex mode because it's doing more thinking. And because people already don't understand the ventilator particularly well, using a more complicated mode means people are going to understand it even less. It becomes more of a black box. And I agree with that. There is risk when you start to accumulate confusion. And you get to the point where all people can do is click the button but not troubleshoot it. They don't know what's actually happening. And if your goal is to avoid that, I think that's an argument for using the more simple, rudimentary, in a good way, modes that use the most directly understandable variables only, rather than more and more automatic control, which is, you know, what a lot of the newer modes have gone to try to help out. But I think the question that we really have to sink our teeth into here is that this phenomenon where a patient who is doing more work gets less pressure from the ventilator. Is that bad? And if so, why?
Oh, that's a great question. I guess it depends on where you fall into this, you know, pee silly argument.
Pee silly, for those of you out here, things we're talking about goofy, is a spontaneously induced lung injury that's caused by the patient breathing on their own on the ventilator, not by, you know, controlled breaths that we deliver.
Sort of excessively dropping their diaphragm because they have a high worker breathing. So we sort of put the alveolus through this very extreme cyclic opening and possibly collapse. You know, if you have the patient doing too much work on the ventilator, either the patient's uncomfortable or they have discomfort, so we start to sort of ratchet up the sedation and maybe even paralysis, right? They're they're dysynchronous, it's alarming, they look uncomfortable. They're already on propofol and fentanyl drip. Then we sort of start bolusing some Versed, and then we get down this whole sort of, we get down this rabbit hole of sedation. We're trying to fit the patient to the ventilator, right? If you're going to say the patient can sort of spontaneously breathe and interact with the ventilator, then we would want to provide enough support to make breathing comfortable. But as the patient increases their work of breathing and you get a sort of a decremental decrease of support from the ventilator, then what you're left with is just sort of torturing the person.
So here's my, because I've heard this argument many times, and there's probably a time when I believed it, but when I really sat down one day in the light of the sun and thought about it, I realized this doesn't make sense. Because I think what you've done is you've collapsed several different situations into one. You said a patient is in respiratory distress. It's a phrase that does a lot of work here. And therefore, they need more, or at least an adequate amount, of driving pressure to deliver comfortable breaths. And if we don't get enough, they're going to be more uncomfortable, maybe have more lung injury, and so on. Okay, sure. But I think the patient in respiratory distress is one of a few different phenomena. One would be the patient who is not getting enough flow. So if we talk in terms of dyssynchronies, they're having a flow dyssynchrony, a flow starvation. They're trying to suck flow faster than the vent delivers. And that is uncomfortable, for sure.
Okay.
And it probably predisposes to lung injury because you are creating a strong gradient of negative pressure.
Okay.
But that is immaterial to all these conversations. The way you fix that is you use a mode that delivers the best matching of flow to their own efforts. And we've already done pretty well by using a pressure-targeted mode. And if they're still exceeding the flows that the vent can match in a pressure control type mode, there's probably no way of fixing it. You could try pressure support, but it probably won't be any better there. It has nothing to do with that, unless you say, oh, I think by giving a higher pressure, I'm going to give more flow. And you're thinking in terms of, as Ben Ferber would say, tube compensation. I'm trying to give enough flow that they don't feel that pressure gradient. Okay. But I don't think that's what people are generally thinking about here. They're thinking this patient needs to get enough volume. And therefore, we have to support the bigger breaths. So now we're in the realm of a different type of distress or a different dyssynchrony. I need to make sure this patient is getting large enough breaths because they're, I don't know, too weak or something to do that on their own. So if your concern is there, then I could say, well, they are getting large enough breaths. The vent's giving them no support and they're still breathing at 600 cc's for tidal volume. That's why they ended up in this place. So first of all, I think you could argue they have the strength to breathe. And as you say, maybe you should extubate them, but that's another question. And then you could say, well, okay, yeah, no, they're able to, but it's difficult. They're laboring to do so, and they will eventually fatigue. Same reason you might look at a patient breathing on their own or on non-invasive and say, yeah, they're breathing, but they clearly have high work of breathing, and they may fatigue doing that. Okay. But my next question, and this I think is the ultimate dilemma, what should we do about that? Because the only options here are that we support them less and they get a smaller tidal volume, and maybe if they want a bigger tidal volume and they're not getting it, they're fatiguing themselves, or we support them more, give them more pressure and result in a larger tidal volume. And maybe that's what they want, but now you have to be okay looking at the ventilator and saying this patient's breathing a tidal volume of 700 cc's. Because there's no other way without medical means like sedation or paralysis and stuff to control this patient's set point for how they're trying to breathe. You support them more, support them, quote, fully or adequately to meet those goal volumes and let them have a big breath, or support them less. Maybe they'd like to have more, but you feel like you're being more lung protective. But you can't change what they want, right?
Yeah. I think we've swung really far into this like 6-7 ml per kg for like everyone in a way. Let's say we set it for, I don't know, 420 or something, right? And they're getting 600. But when you lock them into a smaller breath and sense PRVC, the flow is unfixed. They can take a bigger breath. The vent thinks, wow, the compliance is really good, which it is, and it ratchets down the pressure. Then eventually the patient breathes faster and faster. They get auto PEEP and things, the wheels fall off, right? So when I see that, I need to make two decisions. The first decision I need to make is, am I concerned about this ml per kg? You know, the only thing that we've really shown with consistency is that 6 ml per kg is better than 12 ml per kg in ARDS. I need to make a decision like, do I really need to control the volumes for whatever reason? If they have ARDS or something like that, am I worried about the volume? If I'm not worried about the volume, I usually switch them to pressure control with some sort of okay delta, right? So with a PEEP of 5, maybe a delta of 10 or 12, right? And then I see the volume that they get. You need to make that decision at the bedside, and that's going to be patient specific. Are we worried enough about the total volume that we want to limit it to some degree? And then if you say yes to that, then you need to make a decision. Are we going to increase the sedation? Are we going to paralyze them, et cetera? But if that's not a yes, then I would prefer, and what I do usually is I like to put them on a mode that gives them sort of a constant pressure support. So all the time, when you had a patient with COPD, they'd be breathing 30, getting smaller volumes. I would switch to pressure control. Their rate would slow down, but their volume would get bigger. But they were much more comfortable on that because they got a bigger volume and then breathe less frequently.
The dilemma here is the spontaneously vigorous patient with a lot of PMUS. And there is no easy answer to that patient. You need to, as you said, pick a direction. Are we not that worried about lung injury? So we'll liberalize them and let them breathe big volumes if they want. Or we're very worried and we're going to restrict that and not allow it, whether that's by chemical means or by locking them down on some mode like flat volume control, and they'll have like a wicked flow dyssynchrony, and we're cool with that, I guess, in that case.
Which also, the under support induces diaphragmatic dysfunction as well, which, you know, contributes to length on the ventilator, morbidity, all that kind of stuff. So again, to Tobin, he's a big balloon guy, right? He did all the esophageal balloons. You could sort of quantify the worker breathing very specifically. There's the P occlusion pressure, like, so the airway occlusion pressure, you sort of like try to guesstimate the P must of the patient.
I guess my point is that if people are saying the patient is taking large breaths, and that is my sign that they're in distress, and therefore I should give them more pressure. Large breaths mean I should give them more pressure. I don't think that logic is correct in all but a subset of cases, because it depends on why they're taking large breaths. If the only time that makes sense to me is when you're using that as a marker for a flow dyssynchrony. They're trying to take large breaths, therefore I should give them more pressure so that I ensure to give them enough flow and that make sure they're comfortable. Again, from that like tube compensation perspective, because yes, giving a higher pressure head will generally give more flow. We're already on a pressure targeted mode. Usually we have pretty good flow matching. And I don't think most people making this argument are even really thinking in that sense. They just have it in their head. Patients trying to breathe a lot, they must want more help without thinking what that help means. But the answer for different problems will be different things. Maybe they're in distress because their lungs are not well recruited. They have these little balls of lungs, so they're uncomfortable breathing into them. Is the answer to that more pressure? No, it's probably more PEEP and other things. Maybe they're uncomfortable because they have pain. Is the answer to that more pressure? No, probably to treat those other things, right? You could just as easily argue this from the opposite side and say, the patient is taking big breaths, therefore they need less pressure. And that's probably also the case. And that's, of course, what PRVC will effectively do. It will titrate to that. So I think people need to really kind of sit down and ask what they think this signal is from the patient that they're trying to treat here, rather than saying, you know, it's like when you see a lactate, so you give fluid. Like, what's the chain of events you think will occur here? If they're breathing a lot, so how are you going to fix that? Well, I'm going to give them more pressure. Okay, why? Well, isn't that what you want when you're in respiratory distress? No, maybe, sometimes.
If you have a certain compliance, a certain resistance, and a certain PEEP, and you want to deliver a certain volume, someone has to do that centimeter of water work. Who do you want to do that? Do you want the ventilator to do it, or do you want the patient to do it? Sometimes you want the patient to do it. Problem with PRVC, and to sort of tie in your point, when you see sort of this down ratcheting of pressure and the volumes that are getting bigger and bigger, I don't know how much work the patient's doing. Are they doing 90% of the work? Are they doing 50% of the work? Are they doing 10% of the work? I don't know. I say switch them to pressure control, 5 over some number, 5, and then apply pressure of 10 and pressure of 12. And then I look to see what volumes they get and what rate they're at. Usually what happens is the volume stabilizes or drops a bit and the rate slows down.
Well, and I think what you described, which I think is true, and that's maybe something I haven't highlighted here well enough, which is just to treat this like a closed system where you have a certain amount of pressure delivered by the ventilator and a certain amount of pressure generated by the patient, and in combination you result in the tidal volumes that you have, is not quite right. Because maybe if you increase the amount of pressure delivered by the ventilator, the patient will decrease their own effort, and you will end up with the same amount of volume delivered, but with less work on their part. Because the patient says, oh, I'm getting what I need, I can rest. And we can allow lung rest or diaphragm rest or something like that.
Someone's got to do the work of breathing. Do you want it to be the vent or the patient?
Yeah, and that's a phenomenon I think you can't predict, because it's not math. Mathematically, if you come and give more pressure from the ventilator, added to what the patient's doing, you'll have a bigger breath. But you don't know what the patient will do in response to the additional work. Maybe they will unload some of their own work, and maybe that's something you want in the patient that you want to chill out. I guess what I will just say is that, first of all, you can try it and see, as you said. If I give them more pressure, will they will they chill out, be happier looking, and generate no larger of a title volume? It's not a zero-sum game here where I'm just one on top of the other. If I do more, they'll do less. Maybe, hard to know. But I think what you also should acknowledge is that in these cases where you're specifically saying, I want to take over their work, I want to let them rest, not because of any reason of synchrony or protectiveness, but because I think I don't want them doing any work. I want to zero out that gradient from their pleuris so there's no potential for that piacilli. Maybe I want to rest their muscles so they can get stronger, if that's what your goal is, or rest them somewhat, unload them. You're talking about a patient who is respiratory-wise pretty sick. So you're kind of in that realm of taking control and not encouraging spontaneous stuff. And if that's what the case, then fine. But a lot of the time when we're talking about this and you have a patient who is doing a lot of their own work of breathing, this is a patient who's better. That's why they're so strong and they can generate all these pressures. And that's a person where maybe you go the other way, liberalize them and, you know, maybe extubate them. But to say that I really want to do the work on the ventilator is saying this patient's still in the thick of it. They're like fresh on the vent here. They need to get better before they can, you know, do their own work. That's the minority of these cases.
I think starting from the beginning, PRVC has been sold as this like lowest peak airway pressure sort of phenomenon type thing as a ploy from the vent companies. I think what you'll see a lot, because I see it all the time, is that even if they're not, you know, in the throes of ARDS or whatever it is, just like a bad pneumonia, you know, pneumonia in and of itself gives you this sort of nitus to breathe because it's sort of this noxious stimulant, just, you know, discomfort in the chest from inflammation, whatever it is.
And I do absolutely agree that this is meant to be a sort of mode of convenience, if that's the word, that titrates for you. And we could probably avoid most of the problems, including the vent doing things people don't understand, if we said, take these people and whatever you think you're achieving, just put them on either pressure control or pressure support, depending on whether they trigger. Otherwise, largely, you're going to end up in the same place. And sure. Then do what you want to do intentionally. If you need to give them a lot of pressure, then you know that you're doing that. Are you okay with that? Do you want to do more of the work, or do you want to let the patient do more? They're making a large volume. Is that okay? If it's not okay, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to give them less support, or you think this is a good amount that you're going to be okay with that? Are you going to suppress that? But you're making all those choices intentionally based on your sense of the patient and their physiology or whatever else. That's the same thing that was happening on PRVC. It's just the ventilator was doing one of the steps, and therefore there's more risk that you didn't notice that was happening. You don't understand what it's happening. In this case, it's like it's requiring you to do it manually. And I think fundamentally the problem is that people already don't really get the vent half the time, so having the vent do some of the work just makes it even more of a problem. And I don't mean to like dish on people. That's just like where we're at. So yes, adding a variable here it just makes it that much more confusing.
The vent is the most interesting ICU like intervention that we have, I think, because think about, and you know this, I know you do for sure, like POCUS, right? Like echo. We have echo boards. We have sort of like an objective way of figuring out, can, you know, even though I could just grab the echo and like sort of say the IVC is flat, let's get fluid. You know, there I can have an objective way of figuring out if I know what I'm talking about. With the vent, right? Like, let's say for me, for example, I got done fellowship on June 30th. July 1st, I was in attending. I had no boards that said, Nick knows how to work the ventilator. Like, you know, I could walk in and say, make the total volume, you know, 4 million, right? Like, there's no objective quality controlled way to know if, you know, you actually know how to use this machine that's like ubiquitous through the intensive care unit.
Well, and what I think that also means is we can have this argument not from a physiology perspective, but from a like good practices and real world one, which is how do we, you know, minimize risk the most? And that would be to say, what's the most likely problem to develop and what mode will, you know, minimize those? And I think there's a reasonable case for using PRVC in some settings because it's a pressure control mode that therefore avoids flow to synchrony, which is extremely common when you use straight volume control. And when people don't know how to recognize that, it happens all the time. So you say, well, put them on a pressure mode. But if you put everyone on straight pressure control, then the problem of neglect becomes that no one pays attention to their tidal volumes and doesn't titrate for that. Now, is that okay? I think in a unit where, let's say, a lot of SICUs, generally healthy lungs, you know, you're okay with larger volumes. And if they get low, someone probably will notice, then it's probably okay. A lot of more medical settings, and maybe you have more sick lungs and you want to be a little bit more attentive to that, maybe it's not great. And then it may make sense to use something with a consistent-ish volume, which still has a pressure target. And then the risk becomes the things we're talking about, just not really getting what it's doing. But in every case, you're just picking like what, you know, what problem do you want to develop soonest when people are not really good at managing the ventilator.
Yeah. And I think I don't find that PRVC alarms a lot.
Well, because your volumes are usually pretty consistent and you're not, I mean, so what's going to alarm?
If you're just looking at it from like an alarm fatigue perspective, like PRVC doesn't really alarm often, which this also gets into the like the alarm settings, right? Like what do you set these certain alarm numbers at, right? Like the peak air pressure alarm is 45 or 50 or something. Like what is your alarm?
Well, and maybe that's a way to use a mode like this where you could say, I will allow the ventilator to titrate some things within a range, but I don't think this patient should have an inspiratory pressure below 12. They should at least have that much support and maybe at a high end too, but you know, kind of collaborate with the ventilator as like your colleague here. Like you could have a little bit of leeway here, but I don't want, you know, it's like telling your resident, I want you to call me if you go above this dose of pressure.
We'll include the vent into the Teams meetings too, yes. So we can get a bunch of Teams alerts. That's so funny. You take away from this nothing else then, you know, I'm just some ranting lunatic, PRVC is great, whatever, but maybe I'll just tighten the alarms up a little bit more so it lets me know if something's awry. You know, I don't want the peak air pressure going below 12 because like, why is it going below 12? I think that's, you know, that's a fine place to start at.
Yeah. I think my take is this is probably not a good mode to use if you don't understand it, first of all.
Okay.
And if you do understand it, it makes the most sense for patients who you are not so worried about their lungs. So you don't feel the need to have incredibly tight control over what's happening with their lungs. However, there is maybe some variability in their respiratory effort, and you do want the ventilator to help you out by doing some titration. So they spend more of their time getting about the right amount of support and hitting about their right tidal volumes. But in a patient who's doing a lot of work or who is highly labile, like there's just a lot going on and it's going to have trouble sort of keeping up with, you know, the changes, then it's not so good. Now, in a patient who has no effort and that you haven't paralyzed, then you may not need it, but it's totally reasonable to do.
Doesn't matter.
It's going to titrate to their true lung compliance, which is going to change relatively slowly, probably. But in a patient who is doing a lot, then you may just want to go to a true spontaneous mode. And again, like you said, that can be a nice troubleshooting maneuver too. Like, I don't really get what the PRVC is doing here. Let's just put them on pressure support and then I'll get it. Or pressure control. But I'll say that in places that don't do a lot of pressure control, I don't think they should do pressure control because people don't really, they'll be confused by that too. But Brian, what do you think?
The arbiter. Here we go. That's what I love. Yes, sir. Well, Brian.
I've been listening to you guys nerd out about all this stuff, and the first thing that comes to my mind is a comparison to AI, actually. And there's different opinions on AI and that it's great and it's going to be super helpful and take over and do all this great stuff for us. And then, you know, I read an article just the other day talking about how, you know, using AI changes the way you think. It makes you dumber. And I tend to fall somewhere in between. There's a guy, Ethan Malik, he's a AI guy at Penn, and he talks about using AI by outsourcing to AI very specific things that you understand but aren't good at or are too tedious for you or things like that, right? And I think there's a lot to be made in that comparison here. Like you're saying, Brandon, that this isn't for everybody. So you have to know when to apply it and when not to apply it. And then as long as you kind of understand that you're outsourcing some of these decisions to the machine, that's okay, right? And it's not for every patient. So certainly I wouldn't, if, you know, I have somebody with severe ARDS, you know, who I'm really trying to have tight control on, I wouldn't choose PRVC. I would probably do pressure control or something like that where I have a little more control. But somebody like that, I'm probably also going to be going in the room more frequently and fiddling with stuff anyway. And so I think for, you know, I'm a very much a less is more kind of guy when it comes to critical care interventions. You know, we can sort of, we don't need to do a ton of stuff. We can get by with doing little things here and there. And so for the majority of people, I think something like this works really well because I can say, all right, let's just do this. And we're kind of not set it and forget it necessarily, but a little bit of that, right? And then the other thing I think of is, you know, this I'm sure things like this make a difference, but in how many patients and to what degree, right? And I think a lot of the stuff that we used to do in critical care, or not that we used to do, but a lot of the innovations that we used to have were things like, and we still see this, right? We saw this with COVID. And anytime something novel comes about, right? It's an intervention that fixes the patient versus doesn't fix the patient. The patient gets better or the patient dies. And now I think we have a lot of stuff where we're working more on incremental change, right? The patient's going to get better if we do A, B, or C. Which of A, B, or C is going to get them the most better or better the fastest or whatever like that. And so I wonder sometimes, and I think this is probably where people who aren't as dialed into or interested in the nuances of whatever, in this case, mechanical ventilation, right? Probably get lost in the argument because they're like, well, I don't really care because all three get my goal accomplished. And really, does it matter? And I think, I mean, obviously it does matter, right? That's how we make change, is by incremental change sometimes. And so we wouldn't just say like, well, if A, B, or C all get us where we want to go, but A is better, even by a little bit, we should probably do it, right? But I wonder sometimes with discussions like this, how much of that is, you know, is it always better? Is it better by a lot? Is it better by a little? So I think the discussion's worth having. And like I said, I think it all, for me, it all comes down to understanding that I'm giving something up, what it is I'm giving up and why, and making a conscious decision to do that, as opposed to just saying, well, we always do PRVC. It works fine.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I guess the one parting point I would try to leave people with is that I think it's become sort of trendy to hate on PRVC among like a certain cabal of vent nerds. And the argument is usually this one that, well, a patient in respiratory distress gets less and less pressure, and that's bad. And to them, I would just ask them to like tell me why that's bad, because I think that is bad for some of those patients, and for others it is immaterial, and for some it's probably the right answer. So you have to sort of decide what your patient in quote respiratory distress actually has wrong with them and what the treatment for that would be. And then you can decide how to go about that. And as we all agree, this is, you know, maybe one tool that serves you, but it's probably not going to serve you if you don't understand it. And if you don't understand it, I don't think we have a good answer for those people, except probably pick one or two modes you do sort of understand and stick to those, which is, I think, how a lot of people go about it. But why don't we wrap it at that for this rather niche topic, but you know, certainly one that comes up. Thank you for coming back with us, Nick. And we'll remind everyone, these are just our own opinions, not those of our institutions, and just some general education, no more than that. We'll see you soon.